It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are at today, the 1st of September. This is our change to what easy for you to say, meteorologists would call autumn or fall. And September holds a lot of changes, starting with lots of birds beginning to migrate out of the area. Ed Dallas tells me that he has a lot of orioles coming to his hummingbird feeder. And the reason for that is that Ed's hummingbird feeder is one of those chicken waterers, you know, the little glass cup with the jar that sits on top. And then there's sort of a moat of sugar water around the outside edge. So the orioles can get at it very easily. They don't have to stick their beaks into that little hole and try to drink from that. So Ed's got a lot of orioles coming through. That is something that will probably end soon, and I've got Ed looking, watching for that, and he'll let us know when that happens at his house. Hummingbirds, you may recall a week or 10 days ago, they were swarming your feeders. Now my feeders are settling back into a more summer-like routine. That is, there are a few hummingbirds there throughout the day, but not the swarms of them that were here 10 days ago. So the hummingbirds are moving south. Along about the middle of the month, the ash will probably lose their leaves. The ash are turning yellow right now as we're speaking, and they will probably drop their leaves come middle of September. Toward the end of the month, usually around the 23rd, 24th, we will reach the peak of color for the maples this month. And by the end of the month, around the 1st of October, a month from now, we will begin to see the hazel brush turn either yellow if it's beaked hazel or red if it's American hazel. And those bushes will then, shortly after that, in early October, will drop their leaves. And that's important because for those of us that are grouse hunters, once the leaves are down, you got a much better chance of hitting one on the wing because they can't disappear into the foliage quite as quickly. So September holds lots of changes, but before we get to September, we got to finish up with August, and that means flocks of northern flickers are hanging around. I have seen, as I mentioned, the hummingbirds, paper birch. I was, Harvey Jader noted that out in Becker County, the birches were turning yellow. And around here, I haven't seen much in the way of yellowing of the birches, but the birches are turning brown because there are a lot of birch leaf miners. There's little insects that eat the in-between layers. Think of getting a peanut butter sandwich and somehow crawling in between the layers of bread and eating the peanut butter. That's essentially what a leaf miner does inside of a leaf. And in the birches, it can discolor a tree significantly. And so as I look at the birches, the note I had in my notes was leaf miners making them look senescent. And that just, they're looking like they're getting ready for fall. The balsam poplar, the balm of Gilead, is kind of falling away, starting to turn more brown. And you'll be able to pick them out pretty easily in the next week or so. Among the flowers that are still bringing a great deal of color and joy to the Northland are all of the woodland sunflowers. The Jerusalem artichokes began to bloom at my house this past week. Gray goldenrod has probably reached its peak of bloom. Northern heart-leaved aster, smooth aster, panicled aster, goblet aster, flat-topped asters, eastern-lined asters. There are 8 or 9 species of asters that are common in northern Minnesota, and most of them are in bloom right now. The flat-topped asters, those big clusters of white flowers, sometimes 10 or 12 inches across, and sort of this flat bloom right at the top of the plant, they are in decline. They have passed their peak and are on their way down. But there are half a dozen species of asters out there that are just beautiful right now. So get out and check those out and enjoy them. I saw a wild turkey this past week. Actually, I saw five of them. Red fox, and I mentioned the red fox. Dick Nackbar has been watching this red fox with no tail over on in the Bass Lake area. And the one I saw had a magnificent tail, and you almost think that the fox has to be very proud of its tail because it is a wonderful, wonderful bush of hair and that big white tip on it. And of course, they throw that around and wrap their face in it when it's cold out, and that keeps them nice and warm. So a fox with no tail would be definitely one at a disadvantage. Interrupted fern is turning brown. I don't know if you recognize all of the different species of ferns, but there are a lot of them out there right now, and many of them are starting to senesce. I'm seeing a little bit of brown on the bracken fern. The interrupted ferns at my house are way past that. They're well on their way to decline. And so we'll be done with them for another year pretty soon. And that will be a little bit too bad because I always enjoy the different ferns in the spring and summer. This past week, I have seen several monarch butterflies. They will be, this is the generation that's going to be heading south. And so appreciate every one of them and do what you can to make life good for them because they've got a long, long trip in front of them. And that's going to be something that will be on our minds as we prepare for next year. The white-tailed deer have begun to change to their gray coats of fall and winter. At my bird feeder, I'm seeing fewer and fewer of the summer birds and more of the winter birds. And by winter birds, of course, I mean chickadees, nuthatches, and all of the woodpeckers, minus, of course, the flicker who never comes, and the little sapsuckers that only come just kind of to check things out and wondering what the heck is going on. There's also a great horned owl calling by my house, and I am seeing a lot of American kestrels right now that are probably on their migration. And over in Duluth at Hawk Ridge, they have discovered or they have observed that the migration of the kestrel seems to coincide with the migration of the green darner dragonfly. And there are a certain proportion of the population of green darners that migrate, and the kestrels follow that migration because, of course, it's a moving food source for them. And one of the things that makes migration so difficult for birds is that they're flying from a familiar territory, your backyard, where they're right at home and know every nook and cranny, to unfamiliar territory, which is all of the land that lies between here and wherever they spend their winters. And in unfamiliar territory, finding food sources can be difficult. So it's tough for birds. It's tough for them to find places to feed and eat. And if you have a moving feast flying along with you, it certainly makes the job a lot easier. So American kestrels and green darner dragonflies kind of coordinating their migration together. I'm sure it's something wonderful for the kestrels and probably less wonderful for the green darners. I was sitting outside the other day talking to a friend of mine on the phone, and I was watching three red squirrels in my white oak. And they were busy cutting the acorns off of the tree. But unlike when they're in the spruce or in the pine where they cut the cones and just let them drop on the ground and then gather them up later, there was not a single white oak acorn that came out of that tree. They're either stashing them in the tree or they're hauling them away and hiding them somewhere that I don't know about, but they did not drop a single one. And part of that is, now you have to understand, in my yard I have a large bur oak, the white oak, and right next to it I have an even larger red oak. And the red oak puts out an acorn every year, although it takes 2 years for the acorn to develop. So the acorn that's falling off of the red oak right now is 2 years old, and there's a second acorn on that tree that will be ripe next year. And right now it's very small, probably a quarter inch across. But the red oak acorns fall freely to the ground and I won't say are ignored by the squirrels. They're just not that excited about them. The white oak acorns are produced yearly. They start from a flower in the spring and they become an acorn throughout the year. And by fall, they are a fully engorged and a ripe acorn. And the white oak acorn, the bur oak acorn, is preferred by animals because it has less tannins. And this is something Harry Hutchins taught me. The red oak acorn has a lot more tannin in it, which makes it a lot bitterer. And so they're, you know, if you're given a choice, would you rather eat, a handful of blueberries or a handful of cranberries? You know, it's just that simple. Some are really good and some aren't as good. And you'll eat the ones that are really good first if you're normal like me. So the squirrels were really hoarding those bur oak acorns and really being careful with them, while the red oak acorns are just falling like rain. And I expect that the bear and the deer will probably come along and eat some of those before the season ends. But for the most part, they're there to be had if you want them. So if you're hungry, come eat the red oak acorns at my house. Speaking of red, the red meadowhawks, and some are saffron, or what are they, saffron winged, or there's an autumn meadowhawk, there's a white-faced meadowhawk, there's a saffron winged meadowhawk, or amber winged, I can't recall right off the top of my head, but these are all small, like inch and a half long dragonflies. The males are generally red and the females are generally kind of a brown to gold. And they oftentimes have these beautiful little patterns of black triangles down the sides of their abdomens. But there are a lot of them around right now, and they will remain active until we get some serious frosts. I have seen them as late as November 5th. So the red meadowhawks are going to be keeping us company for quite some time. And the last note I have for this week has to do with loons. And I was out on Pekegama sailing the other day, and I saw a parent, a single adult loon, and a juvenile loon together. So there are still some pairs together, although I have reports of people telling me that there are gatherings of adult loons on many of the lakes in the area. And those adult loons have left the juveniles, oftentimes before the juveniles can even fly, and the adults will move from here to Lake Michigan, and they'll stage there, and then after a couple of weeks of feeding on Lake Michigan, they'll fly down to the Gulf of Mexico, where they'll spend the winter. In the meantime, the juveniles will mature and finally get enough length on their wing feathers that they're able to fly. And once they're able to fly, they will begin their own migration, which doesn't include a trip to Lake Michigan. Usually they bounce around along the Mississippi River and somehow find their way to the Gulf after a bit of trouble. But still some loons with their parents, still some juveniles with their parents, and the beginnings of fall migration for loons. So that's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, if you have comments, questions, or observations you'd like to share, please send them along. We're anxious to hear from you.